Okay, and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Snack Time with Mike and Ant. I'm one of your co-hosts, Ant Testator, a writer of names and flavor text for Wizards of the Coast and articles at Gathering Magic. And with me, as always, is the one and only Michael Maximus Linneman. But more importantly, joining us tonight, a very special guest and one of my favorite current MTG artists, Mr. Seb McKinnon.
Hello.
He's here. We assure you. So we ain't got any time to waste on anything else. We got to go right into the flavor gems, straight quick. We'll go first so that Seb can get a little flavor to it. And obviously the theme of the week is Mr. McKinnon here. So I chose Vryn Wingmare. One, beautiful artwork, very nice, very clean. It's a horse, which are a pain in the ass if you've ever had to paint one. They don't look what you think they look like. So reference is incredible.
Yeah.
they're some of the hardest things to do. But otherwise, the card is very good. It's very, very flavorful of this. It affects other, creatures. Of course, as it is a more important Pegasus. But I'd love to hear about this. I know how difficult it is to paint horses, and especially people on them is so tough. Curious if you could tell us maybe anything about this, Seb. Anything while working on through this piece.
With this one, well, when I got the art description for it, it said show a Pegasus, which for me getting that, like, draw a Pegasus when I was younger. I loved the Pegasus cards whenever I could get one, and I just put them in my deck whenever I could. So to get a Pegasus was a huge deal.
Hold up.
Yeah.
When you put it into your deck.
First of all, what you have to know, I got into Magic just by, because I liked the art, and I have four brothers, and we would just collect the cards and just keep them in a binder just for the artwork that we liked. And it's only like a few years later that we figured out how to play.
Yes. You're blowing Ant's mind right now.
Seb, you're not alone.
And honestly, I think my brothers started getting into more deck building and, like, just trying to, win every time. But I was maybe the only one who, I didn't care what the card did as long as the art was cool. That was it for me. And I would win occasionally, and those were great. The important thing for me was that when I looked down at the table, I was like, yes, like, my army is looking sweet. Everybody looks good right now,
This is amazing. So wait. You have brothers that play do they still play occasionally?
It's now rarely, because we're all, I don't know, I guess, I don't want to say we got out of it, but it's become more of a occasional thing, Thanksgiving for some reason is like when we would whip out our decks and play. And then, like, there's a certain period in the summer, like, there's a few weeks where it's just all of a sudden it's like this craze, all Magic cards, get them out, and then we play a week straight and then it's done and we put them away. And
so you're
wait,
the
so Seb, of- Seb how just for reference how yeah. old are you?
I'm 25.
Wow. He's a young buck.
I thought you were at least older than me. Man, I feel old now.
How old are you guys?
How many brothers? You said you have four brothers. Are they all younger or older?
All younger. I'm the eldest.
All young?
Yeah.
You're the youngest.
So they just freak out.
Oh, you're the eldest. Oh, wow. They can
freak out because they can play literally with their brother's cards.
Yeah, exactly. I remember.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I remember the first time I told them, like, they couldn't believe it. And Attendant Knight was my first ever card, and as soon as I came out, I just went to the nearest shop and bought a whole bunch of singles. And that I didn't know that artists were sent artist proofs either. So I just bought all these singles and then, like,
yeah, I did the same thing.
That's
so you really did understand when I told you that when, like, Lightning Javelin was the very first card of mine that ever got that I named that ever got spoiled, and I immediately was like, I gotta pick up the art somehow, and it happened to be your art.
Yeah.
And so I remember emailing you and telling you that, and you're like, "Oh, I know exactly what you mean," or both. But you do. You like
absolutely. Yeah, totally.
You literally know exactly what I'm talking
yeah.
about.
Super yeah, super funny. All right, Ant, so,
I take it
so
back.
Which one...
Seb is definitely my all-time favorite magic artist ever now. It's official.
Oh, my God.
We're like kindred spirits.
We are. So, yeah, that's so much about Vryn Wigmere. We didn't get to talk much about it.
No, that's how it goes. Sometimes it just you get other things out of this that, like, one of my brothers, I have two older brothers, one of them has played Magic a couple times. He lives in Portland. It kind of comes with the territory. But it's never something that we had, like, a shared passion with of sorts. So I think that'd be such a ridiculous thing to be like, oh, yeah, my brother makes cards for this game. You know, like, when it comes up in random conversations for them. Like, it just must be the most incredible thing.
Yeah. No, it's really awesome. It's really cool.
So what are you rolling with?
Yeah, so I mean, I spoiled it a little early, but my flavor gem is Lightning Javelin. Like I said before, this was the first card that I ever wrote for that got, spoiled to the public. And as we were talking about before we started the cast, I have this particular artwork in a canvas print on my wall, and it's probably my favorite thing hanging on my wall. Don't tell my fiance that.
Sorry, the phone's ringing here, but do you guys hear that?
Yeah, we can hear it.
Yeah.
Sorry, cool. It's going to go off soon. I won't, I'm just going to let it ring. Okay.
Just give it a second. Okay.
Okay, cool. Sorry.
But, yeah, no, that's no problem. But I would have to say one of my favorite things about this piece in particular is that, and something that I didn't notice until I actually had it, blown up on canvas in front of me, was how much turquoise there is in that harpy's feathers. You can hardly even see that at card size, but it really makes it pop. It's a really, really cool looking
painting piece. Those feathers, I was sort of, when I was doing them, I was sort of in the same mindset when I did Returned Phalanx. I don't know if you guys remember that card.
Sure. Yep.
If I blew up that artwork, if you looked at their robes, you know, it's the sort of the same technique I used for the feathers, you know, sort of patterns, sort of graphic patterns, but with colors interacting in subtle ways, you know? Sure. Yeah. So I like doing that. I like putting, you know, stuff like that in my stuff, I guess, in my art. Try to make it a little different. Sometimes, I don't know.
Yeah, add a little flavor to it.
Yeah.
All right. So, of course, we're going to ask you to do one as well. Which one would you pick?
Might as well. I think Blind Obedience is a good one to talk about. Mainly because I remember that was one of my first ones I had done. I forget how many before that one. I remember when I sent it to Jeremy Jarvis. I think I wrote to him by the way, let me know, because it's weird because art directors for Magic, they don't really give you any feedback whatsoever on your work, like ever. You know,
they just expect you to be good. That's it.
Yeah. Well, what I was told at the beginning is like, if we don't email you, it means you're doing a good job. You know, so I was like, okay, cool. But even then, for me, like the silence was like, oh, like I don't know, am I doing a good job? You know. I guess a bit of doubt was starting to creep in, and I sent Blind Obedience, and I just said, like, I really hope you guys like this, you know. At the time, I was backpacking Scotland, and I remember I was with my brother, Ben, the second eldest, and we went into, like, this library in this village in Scotland, and just to, like, you know, check up on stuff and email family and tell them, you know, everybody's was okay. I remember checking into my email and getting a email from Jeremy saying, like, wow, this, like, great job on this one. You really, like, stellar work, man. Just, like, very small, quick email. But that made a whole difference to me. Like, that was, like, a huge gift that day, you know? And then the rest of the trip was just so much better for it. Just because... I was like, well, okay, good. I'm doing a good job. They like my stuff. And hopefully when I get back from Scotland, I'll keep doing more work. And I have been, you know, so that's all good stuff. And actually, the brother I was with in Scotland is the model for the pose of the crouching or kneeling figure in the front. So yeah.
So have you asked other family members to ever pose for scenes and things, or do you just kind of paint them in from time to time?
Rarely, you know, all of my stuff really just comes from my head. But Blind Obedience is the only card. I'm scrolling through all my cards right now online. Yeah, that's really the only one I asked someone to model for the kneeling pose. But other than that, in my head.
Just comes off fresh. All right, so Flavor jumps through. We got a bunch of questions for you. We'll get to Shadows Over Innistrad for a second here. Okay. But for people that don't know, Seb, where are you from? Where are you located out of? You have a slight accent that isn't traditional, you know, diction from Middle America.
That's so funny that you guys picked that up. I'm from Montreal. So yeah, and I do speak French too, but I am more of an Anglophone here, you know. So like, and you guys are not the first, but I'm always baffled when people tell me that, like, you have a slight accent. I'm like, what?
Very, very slight. It's
the letter A. I picked it up when you said aunt.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, it's the French influence.
Right.
Right.
I guess that's what it is. I suppose. I don't know.
Okay, so you're from Montreal. Yep. Magic artist there. You have two new card arts in Shadows Over Innistrad.
Yeah.
Can you give us some info? Like what was going on through your head? You obviously played the game before. Innistrad is back. Talk us through it. Like, when you got that email, what happened?
Yeah, first of all, I remember getting the commission for I think Attended Night, and that of course was amazing, like wow, like, but I think at the time, if I remember correctly, that was also when the first Innistrad block came out.
Sure.
And I in that summer we were going crazy, my brothers and I, we were like, this is the best set ever. And and I remember I was like, wow, okay, I'm doing, like, I felt bad in a way because I felt like I had just missed it, you know? I missed getting a chance to work on this set because it's really my style. I like eerie things and dark things and, you know, that kind of stuff. And I was just really blown away by the artwork of the first set. The first time it came out. So then when they announced, okay, Return to Innistrad, that was like, wow. I'm going to, like, I was, yeah, over the moon, really. It was really great. Fantastic.
All right. Fair enough.
It's good to hear you confirm that because Mike and I were talking. We did an episode on Shadows Over Innistrad a couple weeks ago, and we both ended up picking two of your pieces that were in the dual decks, mm-hmm. Toppelgeist, and there's another one. It's escaping me right now. Compelling Deterrence is the other one. And we were both joking around. We're like, man, this whole world is like Seb's wheelhouse. Like, it's just so fitting to your kind of like style, which is very conceptual but dark and kind of eerie, which is cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's good to hear you confirm that. You know, we were right.
Yep.
If you would have said you hated Innistrad, I'd have felt
no!
bad.
No. No, I really, really love it. And it's too bad I couldn't have done more for the set, you know, like, and, perfect world for me.
Is that, did you have just those two or do you have more coming?
I have more coming.
When the set, oh, you do have more coming for that, for Innistrad?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. We'll keep our eyes open for them.
Yeah. Hopefully, I don't know if it's going to be in this, the first set there, but, yeah.
Speaking of Toppelgeist, I have just a really quick question for you,
mm-hmm.
On that one. Was the art description actually saying like draw a ghost just knocking over a candle, or was it more just like was it more ambiguous and that was kind of your idea, or was that something that was...
I wish it was my idea.
...written in the description?
Yeah, I wish I could say it was my idea. No, but it was in the description. They wanted a ghost toppling, or like a pushing a candle over. Yeah, so that's okay. What I did.
But it, so I guess, was it your kind of decision to make it, you know, just one long index finger?
That's where the artist, you know, I guess makes those decisions afterwards.
Right.
And I remember, I think if, I had only sent one sketch to the art director. Because for me, that was the strongest one. And I feel bad though when I do that sometimes, like sending only one sketch, because for me, it's really the one I want to do, you know, and it's always
it's nerve wracking. Like, what if they don't pick it?
I don't know. If I send too much, I probably should do that. I think I do that most of the time, you know, one to three, sketches. But when I really like the first sketch I do, and that's usually the case. It's like, it's always the first one, you know, when I get into it, I get the art description. Okay. I'm sort of spending my day, you know, all day just like trying to come up with the best depiction of this, of what they want. And it's always for me the first Sorry guys, connection.
Hey, no problem.
No, it happens. It's really not that weird.
Where did it cut off? Because I sort of went on talking and then was feeling nervous, and then
You started about how it was the only sketch you sent in.
Yeah, okay. And I think usually, like, you're supposed to send in, I don't know, I'm not sure how many sketches other artists sent in, but like, I usually do like, you know, two to three. But whenever I really feel it on that first sketch, I just say, look, like, this is really what I think would be the best for this, and you know, and I'm glad that they went with it.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so question on, so you sent in one sketch
for topic sketch. I remember.
So, well, how do you deal with your sketches? Are they all digital? Do you start in pencil? Do you do ink and then scan? Like, how do you go about starting your process? Do you start with thumbnails, like Noah Bradley loves to talk about? Like, walk us through that.
Me, it depends. Some days I really, you know, I started before turning to digital tools completely. I was like a watercolor artist.
Really?
And I really loved the freedom of that medium. You know, it's sort of like you can't control it. You know, like you sort of have to go with it and just go by gut instinct most of the time. So I love that about it. So every now and then, I'll start, you know, a card sketch with a very quick, like, watercolor sketch, you know, kind of thing, or even with acrylic paints, but really watered down. And a part of me wishes that I can just go on and finish it, you know, completely traditional medium, but then I always end up scanning it and going crazy in Photoshop, because Photoshop really allows you to do that. You know, it really allows, there are no restrictions, no limitations. And, so whatever the art directors get is always a digital sketch, but sometimes underneath, you know, my digital paint is an original there.
So it's an underpainting.
Yeah. And then sometimes I'll use.
Do you save those? Do you still have like all of your original sketches from your works or your pieces?
Sometimes I save ones that actually look good, but then the rest I don't. I just throw them away.
Oh, no. Don't do that.
Please don't do that anymore.
I think the last. Yeah, I probably shouldn't have. But the last one. No, but like, guys, like, you don't even know, like, they're not even presentable, you know. It's really just to get
that's okay.
colors and like textures, because I'll scan the textures and use them in the artwork too, you know, in the digital.
That's all Mike wants is colors and textures.
I'm dying right now, 1,000 deaths. Like, that raw creative process where you're working out a face, or you're like, what if I, you know, put a horse here? Or you kind of just have forms, and sometimes you add some color or, like, depth of building composition. No one keeps that set. No one does. And the people that are in concept work sometimes do, like, especially the people that worked in-house at Wizards during, like, concept pushes and stuff. Those people keep those, and oh my god, art collectors kill for that sort of stuff. Really? Because artists normally just throw that away.
Right, yeah.
Keep that stuff!
The last one that I managed to bring to, like, a GP event when I was invited as a guest artist was the one I did for the vampire one. I forget the name.
Oh, the rabid bloodsucker or something like that. Is that what it is?
Yeah, so I actually had a massive like high quality watercolor paper with that sketch on it, and somebody bought it for me at the event, so that was cool, you know. So I think I'm going to start bringing those more in the future.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Do that.
Yeah, that one in particular, that I loved that one, Rabbit. Like, the second I saw that one, I remember seeing that in the card file, and just, like, I immediately recognized it as you, and I'm like, that image is just so haunting and creepy.
And it's just too bad, though, when a card is not really good. Like, I don't think it's not, like, a very good card, you know, if I'm not mistaken. But it's too bad that the art really doesn't get attention in that case. And sometimes, you know, like, for example, like Chrono Stutter, you know, I've had people tell me, like, it's a waste of nice art on a card that maybe no one will ever play, or, you know. So it's too bad when that happens. But hey, what can you do? But,
well, that's how it shakes out. I mean, you could see, like, a Donato Giancola who did, like, life gain commons that no one plays, and you're like, oh my god, this man is a living master. What happened?
Yeah.
But, you know, it's always hindsight, you know, because sometimes they just need that card to get in there.
Yeah.
All right, so you talk about the sketches, you scan them in there. How do you do some of your work then? I mean, do you leave it for a few days? Do you let it breathe, you know, where you let your ideas form, or do you just pound it out, you get a commission, you don't sleep for a day and a half? Like, how do you do that when you get with any illustrations that you get signed up for?
I'm more of a guy like that. I'm somewhat of a night owl too, so I like working at night. And I'll just, I'll try to get as much as I can done in one shot, because I'm sort of, I guess, like riding an emotional wave. You know, I know the feeling I want the card to have, so I try to get as much down as possible. And for me, mood and feeling is everything in my artwork. And if I don't feel it, I have a really hard time getting out there on the card. So I try to get as much done as I can, but I've come to realize that it's very important for me to take a break as well. You know, so I'll spend maybe a day or two straight, and then take a break and not look at it for a full day, and then see how I feel about it then. And that's more to, like, touch up details later on, you know. Me, I like to keep things loose. Like, I think that's because of the watercolor background I come from. And I know, you know, I think magic is really looking maybe more for like rendered art, I guess you could say. So I really need time after, and, like, to really zoom in and be okay. Like, they probably won't like this to be so, like, not as defined, so I have to go in and, like, you know, touch up things every now and then. But
this is too loose. I got to add definition. I need to add shine. Yeah. I need to get the light source right.
Yeah. But I try to work it out very quickly, you know, as much as I can.
So do you do any, like, beforehand? So, for example, if you know that you're working on, I don't know, Innistrad, right? Do you do any type of research beforehand, or listen to any type of music, or watch any type of movies to kind of get you in that mindset of gothic horror or something like that?
I could see how that could help, but not really.
No, not really.
And to be honest, like, I don't even really listen to music when I paint.
Really?
Yeah, and I find and people tell me that's, like, you know, a lot of artists that you see them with playing their music, and I've always felt like, for me, I think when I listen to music, my mind will wander too much, and I'll go into other worlds and just follow the music, and then you know, I've tried like to really, you know, sit down in work and with headphones on and like just get my the illustrations down. But then I realized like an hour will go by and I'm still not much more advanced. And I, you know, my work only really gets done when I put the headphones away and I just work in pure silence.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I mean, obviously you leave your house from time to time too. do you bring anything that helps get an idea of, for example, do you bring a moleskin when you're, I don't know, visiting some Mounties across town and you attack a beaver on the way, you know, whatever those stereotypical Canadian things are as you wait in line for Tim Horton's cup of coffee or something?
Exactly. No, yeah. all the time. Moleskin, all the time. And it's also, it's something that my brothers and I always did, like, you know, even just going out to restaurants, as a family, we would each have our sketchbook.
Really?
And and we'd be drawing characters and, like, you know, we played our sort of own version when we were younger of D&D, I guess you can say. We didn't even know D&D really existed, but we had our, only later did we find out, hey guys, we were actually playing a similar version of that game. We called it Map Game, where we would draw maps and our own characters and our weapons and all this, and we would, you know, just fill our sketchbook with these characters. So yeah, I sketchbooks all the time. Yeah,
you are blowing my mind right now. Yes. I'm not kidding, because I swear to God, like, when my brother listens to this, he's gonna lose it, because him and I used to play a version of D&D before we knew what D&D was, but we would play it with action figures. Like, and we would hit, my bedroom had green carpet and his had blue carpet, so mine would be the forest and his would be like the ocean or whatever, and we would do these massive campaigns where we'd like roll dice and all this stuff. Yeah. And my cousin came over and he's like, oh, you guys play D&D? And we're like, what's D&D?
Exactly.
Like, we had no idea what he was talking about.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's incredible. So if you and your brothers were really active in this making of sketchbooks in a creative life, if you will, who really did you look at for art? I mean, did you have any early influences or artists that you really looked to gain inspiration or really enjoyed?
Absolutely. Me, it's always, and it still is, it always has been, Alan Lee.
Sure.
And so you guys are familiar with his work, right?
I am, yes. I don't know if Ant is.
Yeah, I am not.
Oh, he was. He actually was one of the main concept designers or artists on the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Okay.
But this guy, he like, the reason I think I liked him so much because he works entirely in watercolor, and the mood in his paintings and his color palette, I guess, the very. You know, sort of, he didn't really go for bright colors in his paintings. You know, it was always
muted.
Muted colors. Yeah. And it, for me, was always, I don't know, a sort of mystery as well came out from those paintings. And I remember getting, actually right in front of me right now at home, there's this, I have Lord of the Rings trilogy Tolkien, book illustrated by him. Like he illustrated all three of the trilogy. And, that book was almost like a Bible to me. I would, you know, just pore over the illustrations, not read it, just look at the illustrations all the time. And I tried to decode how he did things, how he did his art. He's really the reason I became an illustrator, I have to say. Alan Lee. Yeah.
Wow.
Now today I have other artists.
Okay. So that was then. Obviously, you can't go to too many museums and see Alan Lee's work on the walls, unfortunately. Who are you looking at now? Who's really got you wowed for some of your current work?
There's a guy. Okay, there's two. There's James Jean. Do you guys know him?
I don't know James Jean.
James Jean is, I don't know if you're familiar with the Fables graphic novels.
Yep, I do know those.
He was like the one who did all the cover art when they like first started coming out. And his style, and I think he's actually one of the like the biggest illustrators out there today. Like he retired at a very young age, and just started doing his own pieces. Like he was a freelancer; he was doing cover art for the Fables graphic novels, and then started doing gallery work when he was really young and just like skyrocketed this guy. Like, I don't know how much he sells his paintings for, but they're quite something. And
oh, he was the Rift guy, wasn't he?
Rift?
He made this. He made like this accordion book? Fold kind of book.
Yeah, I think that
I
was
hearing about, and it was like a huge deal.
Yeah, yeah, that would make sense if it was him. He made these books that were really hard to get too. Like they were only, they made a certain amount, and they're highly collectible, I suppose now. And so there's that guy. And if you look at my Grim Return piece, I was really into his stuff when I made that piece, and I don't know if it comes across at all, but
see, there's a little bit of influence there. I can totally see that, absolutely.
And then there's another guy. He's sort of, I don't, yeah. His name is Ivan Solayev, I think. I'm not pronouncing correctly, but he does these just black and white illustrations.
Oh wow, these are cool.
Yeah. And
yeah.
It's that kind of eerie stuff. Yeah, that's my jam.
Yeah, these look like they almost look like negatives.
Exactly.
Of just things that should not have been photographed.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's it. And he's sort of invented. I feel like there's almost like a mythology or like this folklore behind his stuff. Like he's world building, and he's not. He has a lot of fans, but he's sort of he seems to me like a shady figure, like a very mysterious guy, so I love looking at his stuff too, and I can't wait when the next piece of his comes out.
These guys are both very iconic, very visual looking artists. You can tell a style right away.
Yeah,
I think some of that shows through with your work that. Across the room, they'd be like, "Oh, that's Seb's work." You just know,
really?
it's not a deviant art theme of the month speed paint. You're like, "Oh, that's Seb's work," and I can tell by texture and something about the faces it's just his.
Really?
Is there anything that if an outsider looked at your work, is there any other distinguishing feature that you could really talk about? You know, the watercolor or anything new that you're deviating or starting with that could show it as yours that you would recommend for someone to look for?
That's a good question. I don't know. Like, honestly, like when you guys tell me that, for me, it's a huge compliment. And I do like, honestly, like I do look at like a, you know, when cards are spoiled, and I do look at comments and I do read forums, and like, because I want to know, am I doing a good job still? There's always that.
No one tells you. Of course, no one will tell you this. Like, they're like, "Oh, yeah, I love your work." No, they're never going to tell you in person this.
Right.
But there's going to be that person that has 8,000 Necromancer stockpile because he loves the artwork, but he'll never tell you. God knows.
But when you say like my style, like I have a style, it's funny because I don't feel like I have one. Like I feel I'm still searching, I guess you could say. So, like I mentioned before, it's really about the mood and the feeling. And sometimes the feeling I get is maybe not so much of a realistic rendering, you know, or it'll be more like if you look at Compelling Deterrence, you know, it's sort of cartoony, you know, if you zoom in and you see the guy's face with the big eyes, you know, but really for me, it was like, I got to make this guy look like really afraid, you know?
Right.
It's playful.
It's playful at the same time. And so I guess I treat every art commission as if it was my first one, you know, and I try not to look at my past work. I just, you know, I give it my all, and I just really, whatever comes to me, I try to keep my mind open as much as possible. And then I just go with the feeling. And I've lived my life like so far that way. And every piece of art I do is just pure feeling. And I try not to think. And it's weird because when I think too much about a piece, that's when things go awful, you know?
Right.
Yeah, and it's weird. It's a really weird state to be in. And I do, like, listen to other artists talk, and you know, and I read interviews and things like this. And a lot of artists, they really they have a very, very strict work ethic, you know, and they then they say how that's the best way that they can, that's like how they make their best work. And I'm trying to figure that out for myself, because they do. I always I feel in a way, maybe I shouldn't be saying this, but like I feel in a way a bit inferior to the other artists working for Magic, you know. Like I look at these guys and they're like, geez, these guys are giants, you know. And I'm I honestly can't believe I'm actually working for Magic, you know?
That's such a funny thing, because I mean, I remember talking to Todd Lockwood about this. I think we were in a bar at Gen Con or something, and I asked him, I said Todd, what keeps you motivated, what keeps you, you know, always striving to, like you said, to make every piece your first one, keep it mm-hmm. hungry. And mm-hmm. and he said to me, you know, it's not the people that are my contemporaries that I worry about. It's that next young buck. It's that next 21-year-old that's younger than me and better yeah. than me and hustles yeah. harder than me. And that right. forces me to really keep my level of painting so high, because I'm so nervous, because Magic artists get replaced fairly often. And mm-hmm. I can totally see this in which you say that. You're like, you know, some of these guys are so good. I mean, you can talk to Jason Rainville and be like, dude, you're incredible, killing it. And he's like, dude, I'm sweating my balls off. So many guys right. so much better. Like, I don't know if it's part of, like, being in Magic, or that's part of just being a fantasy illustrator. Like, mm-hmm. when you finally feel like, dude, I made it, and all right, I can flex my wings a little bit here, instead of always being hustling to be like, oh, crap, you know, it's good. I'm going to have a bad piece.
Yeah, yeah. No, there is definitely a pressure there all the time. And yeah, that is one of my fears, is like just being sort of forgotten, or like not getting that next commission. You know, that must be super stressful. And I don't know.
As you get a commission every time. For me, looking at it, I assume that you turn some down because you're just busy with other stuff.
Me? Never. I never turn anything down with Magic. Never.
Well, you even one thing that I noticed that was really kind of crazy is that in Concept Arkira, you did the same card twice.
What's that?
You did Grim. It's called like Grim Horror Spec.
Yeah, yeah.
You did it twice.
Yeah,
which is interesting, right? You did two completely different versions of the exact same art description.
Right, and it took me aback a little bit, but I was like, no. And it's funny, because in the email it would actually say, if you don't want to do your own card again, let us know. I'm like, whatever, like it's such a privilege to do it, so like, yeah, let's do it, you know. But the two cards are very different. I think, though, I tried, when I didn't want to like repeat myself, you know, I didn't want to like because some artists, and it did work well, you know, some artists just like did a slight tweaks to it, and they didn't really alter it that much, but I just went with a blank canvas and just like, yeah, totally different style.
So you know the difference between these two things. This Ugin's Fate is this like super rare version of the same card, because this was you could only get it through, you know, the pre-release. Just to give you some perspective, the mm-hmm. the normal Tons of Kartir card of Grim Horror Specs is worth about maybe a quarter, right? Like, it's a rare, and it'll always be, you know, pretty decent. The Ugin's mm-hmm. Fate one, the special one, is worth like $6 to $8. It's like 60 Whoa. Times more valuable
than no your way. Other one. Wow. Yeah.
So it's for people that are going to be looking a few years down the line, this card will probably be something people are going to be looking for. You know, people that like dragon decks. Because there's a, you know, that has the
dragon. Right, because there's a dragon in the background. Right. Or...
And mm-hmm. people will be asking for an artist proof, or, you know, do you have any of these things? So just be mindful of that you're probably going to be getting that question at events, and you're like, why the crap do you guys want this? That's why.
Guess what? There's this one guy who's he's so kind. He's actually he's always there when I go to a GP event, you know. And he says like, he apparently, like, he's my number one fan apparently. And we always like end up hanging out, and you know, we go to lunch together and stuff. But he bought every single Ugin's Fate Grim Horror Specs of my artist proofs. He bought the whole thing. It was on my table. And I had just brought it out, and the day was beginning, and he was the first one there. He was like, I want all those. I was like, whoa, okay. And I did a few altars for him on the cover. So, I mean, he's going to be happy to hear that because he owns them all, all 50.
Interesting. That's crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
What? I mean, that's awesome. How does that kind of felt like having fans like?
It's on it.
In general, what has that kind of been like?
It's honestly, every time I come back from one of those events, for me, I haven't been to one in a while, unfortunately. But one of the best ones I went to was one in Prague, and I remember just being there, and I was with Jesper Ising, who's an awesome artist. Like,
sure, so he's great. Quite good.
Yeah, and his stuff is like right away recognizable, which I really admire. You know, in an artist, if your card is recognizable right away, it's like, wow. I have a lot of respect for that. And coming back from that, or any Grand Prix event, talking with the people and seeing and interacting with them is like such a morale boost. And it's like, I always feel an urge after, like, I can't wait for my next commission, you know,
right.
after seeing the love and the passion for the game through by these players, you know, it's the community, the people there. It's so awesome to be a part of it. And people tell me, like, you're like a rock star, man. Like, and I'm like, what? What is this? Like, no.
I don't know where I'm eating lunch. I don't know.
Exactly. You know, like, so it's just.
Sorry, are you planning on being at any events in the near future, do you think?
I emailed one of the organizers for Europe. Sure. if I end up getting good cards in Innistrad, Richard Innistrad, hopefully that'll be enough for them. Like, it'll be of a good enough reason to get me a flight over there, and it doesn't matter where, as long as it's in Europe. I'd love to just like to travel. That's one of the perks of, you know, being a Magic artist. You get,
right,
you get to travel and see things during these events, you know. So I'm just keeping my fingers crossed I get like a gold, a cool gold card or something
amazing. Well, then that
spoken like a true Vorthos, yeah, right there. Like, just like a cool gold. Oh. Yeah, I don't know.
So that
what about traveling to the beautiful state of Oregon?
Yeah, bring him to GP Portland.
How would you like to go to GP Portland?
Yeah, where honestly, wherever.
I
don't care. Yeah, where.
So what about your local? Do you ever sneak into your local card shops? Because I do have friends that live in Montreal. I have friends that live in Toronto. Mm-hmm. Do they ever invite you in for like a Saturday morning pre-release and be like, Seb, we're gonna buy you breakfast. Would you come in and sign a few cards? Does that ever happen?
No.
Really? That never happens. It hasn't happened.
It's happened once, but not in Montreal. Like, I was called from a store by a store in out west in Canada. I'm drawing a blank here, but and they actually flew me down just for their pre-release at the store, and I was the only artist there, and it was honestly the craziest experience. You know, I was up till like I think 3 a.m. you know, signing things, and it was crazy. It was like a Grand Prix event, but like. I think it's because I was the only artist there, but the amount of things I was signing, my hand, like, I couldn't bear it after a while. But I was feeling it, the adrenaline, and it was actually, they kept me there for a few days. It was like a pre-release. It was the Theros pre-release, so people were coming with their Vaporkins and all this stuff, and it was like, whoa, doing playmats, and it was I really have a hard time saying no to people, you know, like, especially fans. So people would come with their playmats, and I'd just say, yeah, bring them, you know, I'll do a full art playmat art for you guys. And I learned a lesson that day, you know, that during that time I couldn't I do it all. But it was crazy. It was really a good experience, but that was the only time that a store invited me, and it was not in Montreal.
Interesting. Yeah. So say, wow. You know.
Maybe they just don't know. Maybe they don't know.
if you're really nice, you know, buy the man lunch. Yeah. Give him a pillow. Don't make him sigh too much. He might stop by if you're nice about it.
Yeah.
So
that's funny. So I got something.
You got something, Ann? I know what you can talk about.
So one thing that I said that I absolutely love about your work is how kind of conceptual it feels. Like I'm a big fan of concept art, and I don't know if maybe it's because of what you were speaking to earlier, how you kind of approach each piece differently, and you're more just trying to capture that mood first before you tighten it up.
Yeah.
But it always has this like really, really cool concept feel to it. And I saw on your website that you also do concept work. And so I was just wanted to, you know, speak to you more about that. Like maybe talk about some other concept work that you've done, or is that something that you're interested in doing? Like,
absolutely. Especially for film. And I guess we can talk about film later, cause that's like a huge passion of mine. Concept, I actually, you know, with me, I graduated from my, from college, I guess you could say. In Quebec, it's a different system. It's called CEGEP. And sort of pre-university, but I did like a technical program, 3 years studying illustration and design. And I was very, very, very fortunate to have been like picked up, I guess. We had our end of year vernissage, and one of the art directors of Ubisoft Montreal saw my stuff, and I got hired like almost like right away, you know? So I worked at Ubisoft as a concept artist for a little while, and this was before Magic, and I think around the same time when I graduated, I submitted my portfolio to Art Drop, you know, like a
That's John Shindahedy, sure.
Yeah.
They started the Art Drop, and they it's like a, you just email the Art Drop at Wizards, and you know, all the art directors get to see it.
Yeah, and is that still there? Do you guys know?
Oh yeah, the Art Drop is totally still there.
No way.
Tons of people still email that thing to say like, "Hey, look at my work," and usually you don't hear anything, but sometimes you do.
Right. So I was not expecting anything at all. I just did it because, hey, like, why not, right? And then like months later, I got a reply. But during those months, I was just purely doing concept art for Rainbow Six, the Rainbow Six franchise.
Cool.
So yeah, like that was great. To be in that environment, but I quickly realized that I really wanted to try being a freelancer. You know, I was right out of school, and I just really tried, you know, once I started getting the Magic stuff, I was like, okay, let me just try doing this on my own, freelancing, getting gigs anywhere else. And concept art is something I'd like to do, but I don't really get much of it anymore. The most concept art I did was really when I was at Ubisoft. But every now and then I get something, you know, like, a month ago, I got approached by a production company, and they were pitching. They needed a concept art for a movie they were pitching, so I jumped on board on that. So I did, I did a few concepts for them to use in their presentations and things. And hopefully, they said that, like when the movie's a go, we'll let you know, and we'll be in touch. So hopefully, they'll get back in touch. But I'd love to do concept art, but I don't know how hard it is. Actually, is I don't really know how hard it is to break into in the movie industry. Do you guys know the artist Jeff Simpson?
Yep.
He's done a few cards for Magic too now, but he's like, he's by the way one of my top artists too. Like he's part of that list. And I met him once in when we were working on Ubisoft, and he told me that he just got an email out of nowhere from the people from the like director or producer of Snow White and the Huntsman, you know, when that movie came out. So he did a lot of concepts for that movie, and I was like, wow, that's amazing. But it's something I love to do, but I'm slowly trying to get into it. Yeah. And I'm doing it, but it's more for my own stuff. Cause I'm getting into filmmaking myself, you know, and I'm trying to,
interesting.
So what's the next thing you got working on here? Like, obviously freelance, it ebbs and flows. Sometimes you get a ton. Sometimes, you know, you're in between projects. What's something you're working on besides, you know, Magic works that people we should check out or be on the lookout for?
Well, I don't know. Like, I don't know if you guys know, I did, like, three short films a trilogy of short films called Kin Fables. And it's sort of like this idea actually came to me at a time when I was like, you know, just I was feeling maybe a creative low, and I was like, I really want to make something cool and awesome. And at the time, I was living with my brother Ben, who's like my like we're sort of a duo. Like we work on stuff together, and he's a self-taught, you know, videographer and filmmaker and cinematographer, and he does amazing work. And at, when I was first started working for Magic, he was, you know, getting into filmmaking, and you know, he was shooting a lot of rap videos for, you know, for Montreal, like underground rappers. You know,
that's super cool.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
So, but then I realized, hey, like, you know, we as kids, we would make movies together a lot. Like, we made home movies. That's how we spent our summers, playing Magic and making home movies. You know, so I told Ben, like, look, like, why don't we just make this grand scale multimedia project, and that's where this sort of concept came out. And it's sort of a cinema, it's like a visual musical journey that you take it in. If you haven't seen it yet, please do, and then maybe we could talk about that like another time, because I could go on and on about this project. But for me, filmmaking,
it's super cool. It's very evocative. Again, Seth McKinnon, mood, evocative, this dark, not always dark, but I don't know. It's evocative immediately. Even I watched one of these early on, and I said, oh, okay. This looks like Seb worked in a different medium.
Right.
it totally does. I'm like, oh.
Do you have these you have them posted? Are they on your website? Or are there anywhere where like they can be viewed?
Yeah, they're on his, you know, he's got a little portfolio of a couple of them. No big deal.
Yeah, on my website, I actually updated my whole look on my website like just recently.
Oh, that's probably why then. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, they're there. You can see them.
Cool.
But what I realized was, for me, it's like I love illustration, and I want to keep doing it, and I still do it. And like this ties into the concept art, because I did all the concept art and the storyboards for these films, right? And you know, I was not a filmmaker when I was like no one. I had never done anything before. I was really relying on my brother Ben to really, you know, I guess sort of teach me the process and like take me along with him. And without, like, I had the maybe like the vision, but Ben was able to like actually make it reality, you know. Doing the concept art and stuff, I really had this feeling like, wow, I just wish my images could move, you know. Like I'm drawing these characters, I'm drawing these costumes, and like I can't, like, I have to make them move somehow. Like so for me, that's where filmmaking is. That's where I am right now in my life. I'm really trying to get more and more into filmmaking, using my art and my illustration work as a sort of launch point, as well as, you know, music making. I did all the music for the trilogy as well. So, you know, composing music, I bought a copy of Logic Pro, and I just started composing stuff in there, and I realized, like, it's so cool. Like, it's so, the music itself will like conjure images in my mind, you know, and I just sort of go, and like the whole idea with the trilogy came from me experimenting for the first time with this music program I got. And that's it. So it's just, again, like as I said before, I'm really just following feelings at this point and seeing where those take me. I'm really feeling filmmaking. I'm really, you know, getting more and more into it. And with this whole trilogy, it actually opened a few doors. You know, like Ben and I, we just recently directed a commercial for a lottery in Canada, you know?
Oh, that's funny. That's fun.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
So
that's probably the scariest lottery commercial ever.
No, you know, the lottery, they wanted a medieval concept, and then they saw our work, and then they thought we were a good pick. So it's funny. I hope I don't get typecast as like the guy doing medieval stuff all the time.
Right.
Hopefully not.
No,
well, we're excited to see more as you delve into this, because it's such an interesting thing to see an artist with such a variety of skills. I mean, this is how Guillermo del Toro, you know, makes his sketchbooks, that you're like, oh, he's just a director, and you're like, no, 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 it's not one thing.
Yeah.
We as your fans, as your community, would love to hear about this more often. So unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap up soon just for timeliness, but we would love to have you on in the future if you'd be interested.
Absolutely. It's been an honor.
Maybe we do a Canadian feature. maybe we're going to have a filmmakers. Maybe we'll have like short blurbs on people. But we'll totally post this up. We'll have some of your work on there so people can see this and know this, because I don't think everyone knows that you made films. People don't know that, and I'm sure you'll be making more. For the rest of the people listening with it, Seb, where can they find you online?
I guess my website is the best way, sebmckinnon.com. I also have a DeviantArt account that I don't think many people know about, seb-m. But yeah, that's pretty much it for now. I don't really have a Tumblr or an Instagram or anything like that yet.
Yet. As more films are made, I'm sure you will deviate out.
Well, yeah, I think I'm going to have to at one point. You know, like, I need to use these tools. They're, you know, I can't. Even though I'm reluctant, though, still. I don't know if I want to get it on into that yet so far. Anyway.
that's good to know, and we'll keep an eye out for when those get posted, and God knows we'll share. For everyone else listening along, follow Seb's work. Check out his stuff on DeviantArt. It's larger than the average card size. You can see bigger images, which is great. But otherwise, come to Snack Time Cast. We're on Twitter, on Gathering Magic, generally on Wednesdays. You can find me at Twitter at Vorthos Mike. Ant, where can they find you?
Find me on Twitter at Ant Tessitore, and also on Gathering Magic for any articles, bi-weekly articles, that sort of a thing.
And that's all we got for today. And all the viewers, thanks for watching today, and we'll be back again soon.